Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Brokerpreneur Podcast. I am Dr. Ben Spears, the ambassador of Flow. I am here with the big guy as usual, Matt Vai. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing, you know, I'm always excited. I'm always doing fantastic. I love having these conversations, but today, man, today is awfully special, man. You know that.
We got an incredible guest.
Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and introduce her because I'm terribly excited to talk to her. We have Mira Kothand, and she's three things as far as I know so far. One of them is an expert at email marketing. Another is an expert at content marketing, and the third is just being an awesome human being. So, as far as that goes, Mira, how are you doing today?
I am really good. I'm so touched by your introduction. Thank you for having me over.
Absolutely. We appreciate it. Now, I know you're in Singapore. What time is it there?
It is 9:30, but I'm good. Okay. I'm really
good. Yeah, so we're just getting our day started. Yours is wrapping up.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. So guys, a little bit of a background. I'm going to let her kind of go a little bit deeper into this because we always like to ask, you know, how did somebody get started in doing what they're doing? But a little bit of a background, some kudos to Mira. She's a 7-time Amazon bestseller. If you're listening, you don't see it, but if you are watching, I'm holding up all of her books here, and they're absolutely spectacular. I read every single one of them. She's helped thousands of entrepreneurs, you know, across the world with her products, her courses, and her online academy. Mira, you're a rock star. Why don't you tell us a little bit? You know, how did you get started in all of this?
Yeah, so I actually got started pretty much by accident. I had no kind of entrepreneurial background. I came from a very traditional family where, you know, go to college, get your degree, go find a job. So I never had aspirations to do anything online, let alone be an entrepreneur, have my own business, nothing of that sort. So I think this was back in 2013. I had my child. I was on maternity leave and I was going to go back to work. That was always the plan. I was in international relations and marketing and corporate. And I had a little bit of a health scare. So I had to go get surgery, go get myself sorted out. I realized, hey, you know, I couldn't go back to work because I had to tell them that, you know, I can't take you up on your offer. So I was at home sitting down and I was wondering, what can I do? And I wanted to bring in my love of writing and marketing. I've always been passionate about that. So that was how I started my blog, just to kind of share where I felt the conversation would lead me. So I was really looking out at the conversations people were having in groups and communities and trying to find gaps where I felt I could value add. And I shared that in my blog and the audience started to kind of grow organically in a sense. So the rest of it was so-called history, because, you know, it just that interaction and engagement with my audience and then led to me creating courses and books and so on. So yeah, in a nutshell, this was how I actually began, pretty much by accident.
No, I absolutely love that. And so, you know, when you were starting, you know, your blog, did you have the expectations that it was going to go, you know, the way that it went, or, you know, we're just saying, listen, I'm gonna try this and see how it goes. I know that, you know, a lot of our listeners, you know, we all have goals, we all have aspirations, and we have visions of what's going to happen. But sometimes we can get caught up in you know, 5 years down the road versus just, you know, the next day.
The day to day. Yeah, absolutely. So for me, well, I didn't know it was going to go as well as it has, but I went into it wanting to do it right. So I went into it really thinking about it as a business before I was even earning a single dollar. So I made certain decisions, being very intentional, going into email from day one, the type of topics that I wanted to talk about, having an understanding of what kind of leaning into my zone of genius. And only talking about topics where I felt I could value add. So for me, it was always about trying to find a gap in the marketplace and where I could value add to the conversation. So I was not really interested in saying what everyone else was saying. And it was always about, okay, what else can I add to this? Or what hasn't been addressed as yet? I think these are the questions that kind of led me into doing things the way I have, whether it's choosing to self-publish, choosing to get started with email from day one, or the type of topics that I write about in my email newsletters and on my blog. So I didn't know that it would go this way, but I wanted to do it right in terms of having that proper experience for that subscriber. I think these are the little things that I felt the decisions I made very early on were kind of led me down this road. Yeah.
Yeah, Matt.
So we love the value add first, right? I mean, that's why. So everything that you've written, I think Ben has tried to consume with pretty much everything that you've written as far as the book goes. You saw he held that up like a fan of rummy cards, right? He grabbed those because that's where he's got them all the time. Anytime we're doing anything, Ben's like, "But Mira said this. We've got to do this." And so we love that. And the reason why is because that comes from the same exact place. You have to reach in and add that value first. It really has to be thinking about them and what is best for them. And we love that for, we love that for our audience. And we really appreciate you sharing this with us and everything. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I know you were jumping in there to say something. I apologize. We have guests.
I love it. This is coffee shop. You know that. So Matt, she said a couple good things that I really want you to, kind of mold into a real estate brokerage standpoint. Number one, she said, she had her goals. She had what she wanted to accomplish in her mind. But from the beginning, and this is what I love, from the beginning, she says, I wanted to do it right.
Yep.
Right. And so I know that you and I are huge proponents of that way of thinking, because it's very easy. I'll specifically talk to new managers, new brokers. It's very easy to jump into this world of we'll say just recruiting and just throw everything out there, just see what sticks, or throw money at the problem and see if that happens. Versus really working on that skill set mindset from the beginning that you talk about all the time. So, touch on that for a minute, and then I'm going to talk to Mira about, building trust.
What she said is, I knew I wanted this as a business to begin with. So I was very intentional about the decisions I made. Right. So sometimes that's not what brokers do. Right. Sometimes brokers go, I'm fed up with where I'm at. I can throw my own shingle out and I can get started and I'll figure out the business part of that later, right? That's not the direction that Mira took. And that's part of what the point that you're taking here, part of the point that you're making here, Ben. You have to be intentional about what you're trying to accomplish, especially if you're going to do what Mira's about to talk about and try to send a message out to them to get them to connect you with it in an authentic way. You have to know who you are. You have to set things up in the beginning truly how you are and how you want to do your business. And so I'm interested to hear how she relays that, because if she was intentional, which she was, about having a business and was intentional about taking where her real genius lies, which was in her writing, and she was adding value first, it seems like that combination of things probably makes it gives you a real easy direction, or an easier direction, on how to connect with people. Mira, am I missing anything there, or does that make sense?
No, you're spot on, and it's really lovely the way you kind of meshed what I said with your target audience. So yeah, you're very much spot on.
Yeah.
So Mira, when you a little bit about our audience, right? So they have this list. It's pretty easy to get a list of realtors as a broker because they're part of the trade association. But it's obvious to all brokers, it's obvious to the three of us, that every single agent, on that list is not going to be a perfect fit for their office, for their message. How do you go from that point to building trust, and then mix in a little bit about, message and voice in that conversation a little bit as well?
Sure. So I think what I'm going to share might be a little bit controversial, but whenever someone joins my list and they get a nurture sequence or a welcome email series from me, So which means this is like one of the touch points that they're going to get within the first 24 to 48 hours after joining my list. I like to send them a polarizing piece of content. So something that's going to ruffle some feathers, something that makes people kind of take a stand, yes or no. And that is one of the ways I kind of make people say, okay, you know, they don't have to agree with me, but I want them to at least be whether they're willing to have a conversation about that, whether they're going to have an open mind about that. Some people might say, you know, no, I don't think this is for me. I don't think this is kind of like jives with what I'm going for. And they might choose to leave. And I would rather people take that route and choose to leave and then stay on my list and kind of skew my stats, my email stats. And then, you know, I'm just kind of accumulating a list of people, and the majority of them don't really end up buying from me, don't really end up being a customer or anything of that sort. So one of the things I always suggest is, what is your message? And if you're not saying something that's going to help you stand out, then you need to rethink your message. Because if you're going to say something that everyone else is saying, then why would they want to buy into your message versus someone else? So whatever your stand is, I would say in one of those very first few touch points, relay that. And this is how you're going to kind of attract an audience and repel an audience at the same time. So whoever you're repelling, that's perfectly fine. But whoever you're attracting, then those are the people that you want to keep close to you, and then use and nurture those specific people. Yeah. So, you know, if you want to get really specific, you could kind of leave. It really depends on the functionality of the email service provider you're using. You could do segments in terms of getting them to make choices, like click on certain things, right, and then you could tag them or segment them. You could do that. Or the other way is to kind of play a little bit of a long game, where through your series of content, people naturally kind of drop off if they don't jive with your message. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so good. Get them to raise their hand and say whether they truly want what you offer, what you authentically are. That's huge. And I love it that you're doing that early on in the beginning there. That, you know, go, why waste time, right? Why get them in the list and put them in the loop? So I think I probably know the answer to this question, but I've got to ask it, because it seems like that would really impact it. If you're making those determinations early on and you're verifying the message early on, your open rate and your click-through rate and everything on your emails just has to be through the roof, right? Because you're doing that verification, you're doing that vetting. Tell us a little bit about that. Where's your open rate, and how much do people click on it and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, okay, if you're going to take kind of like the average industry kind of standard, the open rate, if I'm not wrong, from the last research I read, is about 15 to 20%. And naturally, as your list grows bigger, your open rate does drop. So mine hovers at around 35%. And your click-through rate, I would say the minimum you want to meet is 1%. So for me, my click-through rate is, I don't know, it really depends on the type of things that I share. I don't have my numbers offhand. But the bare minimum is like 15 to 20% and then 1% click-through rate. So the whole intention for me is research has shown that the first 48 hours, that is when people are the most engaged, when you reach out to them. And if it's the first time that they're in touch with you. So you want to make an impact within this 48 hours, and you want them to, like you said, raise their hand and say, you know, yeah, hey, I'm with her. I'm with her message. Let me hear more of what she has to say. Or they could take the other stance and they're like, you know, I'm not really driving with this. And then they could drop off. So it's for you to get clear about who it is that I want to attract. So people always have a little bit of, you know, kind of like a hesitation or a doubt about, all right, who exactly it is that I want to attract. So if you are in that boat where you don't really know, okay, who is my person, think about who is it that you do not want to attract, or who is not your ideal audience. So it's kind of by elimination. So once you get clear on that, you would know that, okay, maybe the person that I don't want to attract would maybe relate to certain terms. So just to share like my own example, my brand doesn't really use the terms mompreneur, or it's not something that jives with my brand. So I would not be using terms like this anywhere on my copy, because that's not really the type of person that I want to attract. So I would suggest doing the same. If you get clear about who you don't want as your ideal person, and then make sure you're not using those terms anywhere right. in your message. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So, you know, I was reading one of your blogs, and you know, came across a couple of things that, you know, really resonate with our listeners, and I wanted to kind of share that, you know, and have you go a little bit deeper into this. So, you talk specifically about building an ecosystem. So, you know, when you're going through and you're having this resonating, you know, polarizing message to really figure out what, you know, who it is that you have. Or that's attracted to your brand, you know, the next step is kind of building a brand and an ecosystem within those people. And you talk specifically about the first step being essentially a step and not a wall. And it said, make the first wall a lot smaller, just make it a step. And then you go on to talk about, you know, then spend time, you know, building relationships. Well, a lot of our listeners, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, they will start by picking up the phone and saying, you know, hey, Matt, do you want to sit down, have a cup of coffee and talk about how I can help you with your business? Right. And they just go, they go right for that, you know, exactly what they're trying to get. And we let them know, you know, that's interrupting their day and essentially asking them a favor at the same time. So why don't you talk to us about the importance of, you know, starting small with that first step and then, you know, building relationships from that point on.
Yeah, so there are a lot of people in my audience who do the same thing. The very first ask is, hey, jump on a call with me. And it can be a little bit intimidating because you're still sussing the other person out. You're still figuring it out. And to kind of ask them to, you know, straight off, you know, like, let's get married in a sense. It can be a little bit difficult, which is why I always say start small. And for me, what I was speaking on was to do with digital products. And I think it actually applies in lots of different places. So it's about getting that person to get a feel or get a taste of your paid content or get a taste of what you're about, and doing it in a way that there is least resistance. There's not much resistance. It's something that they can say yes to very easily. And then once you do that, once they have a taste of your paid content, and at the same time, you're sending them other pieces of content that build a relationship and building trust with them. And what I like to say, I use the term content expert association, where they start to see you as someone that they can trust, or they start to see you as someone that they can do business with. This takes time. It doesn't come, you know, very easily. So pair that and layer that on with something like a small paywall, then that really is going to amplify the trust that they have in you, because, you know, you're not asking for much. You're tackling a very, very specific pain point for them. And then you're giving them a tiny win with whatever it is, with that tiny paywall. And then you're taking steps to build trust. Chances of them going on to do business with you with your higher priced offers is a lot, lot higher. Compared to if you're going to ask that upfront, because there is not enough time for them to get to know you. And every customer has kind of like a journey. And I talk about this a lot in a lot of my books, the buyer's journey, where, you know, it takes time for someone to be aware of, consider and evaluate, and then finally reach a decision on the type of offers that you have. So for them to even reach a stage of decision, they need to be aware of their pain points in the first place. They need to be able to go through that process where they are considering and evaluating all of the solutions that are out there. And it's your job to help them kind of inch them along their journey. So how you do that is through content, through engaging with them. So if you can't take someone from being completely unaware right to decision all in a single day or over a phone call. I mean, it's very hard to do it in that way. So it's a couple of tiny steps and then nudges along the way so that they are kind of led along seamlessly through their journey, the so-called customer journey. Yeah.
Yeah. So Matt, I'm going to ask you to touch on this just a little bit, you know, because again, you know, brokers may say, and feel free to talk about events, challenges, that kind of things, but brokers may say, well, gosh, you know, I don't really know the first thing, the first yeah. little tiny step that I could send. All I know is to call and ask them for a cup of coffee and if they would like to sit down and hear more about our business. So talk to us, you know, briefly about that process and, you know, maybe a couple little things that they could offer that would, you know, lead them later on to that ask and that process.
Hey guys, this podcast is powered by Prospect Boomerang.
We all know broker owners struggle with profitability. Prospect Boomerang compounds your profits by recruiting the best agents to your brokerage.
For consistent growth, visit prospectboomerang.com.
Yeah, so that's so the information there is just so spot on. We love it and we appreciate that. So yeah, instead of just calling and saying, hey, do you want to sit down and have a cup of coffee? What you're actually doing, and you use the marriage analogy, what they're actually doing is saying, hey, look, I don't have a whole lot of time. I need you to go ahead and make a decision whether you want to buy from me or not, right? Quit doing whatever you're doing and come sit down with me and buy or not buy, right? So that's why we use the challenges. That's why we use the events. That's why we have the lead magnets. So instead of saying, hey, come work for me and I'll help you get more business, instead of saying that, say, how come you're not getting the business that you want? Are you not converting it well? Because you can buy leads anywhere, but are you not converting well? Is that really where the issue is? Well, that's what my company is good at. And by the way, we've got this event that's coming up that talks a lot about how to convert business. We've talked a lot about how to build your business ecosystem so you can build a brand within it so that you learn how to convert, because that's automatically going to make conversion easier, right? So if you're getting referral leads from other people within your ecosystem that are already familiar with your brand, that means that the referral that you're getting is going to be an easier referral to convert when it comes time to actually close that person on a transaction. So what you're doing is you're saying, take all these baby steps and actually build a relationship with the consumer or the referral source or whoever it is, so that you can actually get business that's easier for you to convert, because it's not all being treated like right now business. I think that's probably the biggest thing that the listeners can take away from this is quit treating everybody like they want to buy right now or not do anything. Treat them like, you know what, I've got something that's valuable. Let's talk a little bit about it. I hope it helps. If it does help and if it does make a difference to you, then when the time comes, I'd love to talk to you about how I can help you when that time to purchase is right, instead of treating everybody like they're right now, right? And so the right now people are easy. They're going to raise their hand. As soon as you start connecting with them, they're going to go, oh, look, there's some value here. There's something I need to do. And they're going to vet themselves and say, how do I purchase this? It's the people that are not at that point yet that you have to nurture along, which, remember, that's exactly what you're talking about. We love that. So I want to quit talking. I want to hear more about this. I know Ben's got questions for you, but I want to hear more about this because I love the audience. Yeah, everybody listens to Matt talk all the time.
Actually, I love what you said, Matt, because it kind of reminded me of something that I read a couple of years ago. And it says that only 10% of people are ready to buy right now. The other 90% are not. But that doesn't mean, and typically what we do is we focus on the 10 and we just kind of neglect that 90 because we think that, okay, they're not ready right now. So, you know, forget about them. But a lot of those people are going to be ready sometime down the road, and we just completely neglect that 90%. So the key thing is to really stay top of mind. And like you said, give them other opportunities to kind of learn, because not everyone is going to be at the same stage in the customer journey. People further along are going to raise their hands and be ready to jump right in. But there are people further up, maybe just kind of getting aware, that need a little bit more pushing, a little bit more of that trust building before they're ready to get to and join that other 10%. So I love that you said that.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw out a question here, and you just tell me like, hey, it's just not my target audience, and I'm going to preframe this a little bit from a real estate standpoint of kind of what I mean, and then ask you, any answer is fine here. Right. So there are brokers who are saying, I'm going after new agents. Right. They've just got licensed last week, or maybe they're in their first 6 months. But then there's also, you know, a portion of that broker says, I want to attract experienced agents. Right. So agents who, you know, maybe sell 50 homes a year and they've been doing it for 10 years. My question to you is, Do you find that when you're writing your nurture sequences or you're doing these things, you're obviously going to send a different message to someone who is brand new to email marketing versus, you know, maybe someone who says, hey, you know, I've been doing email marketing for 10 years and I've had some success. How do you build those pathways that, you know, that allow you to attract both of those people? Because essentially, you know, brokerages need both of them. And I'll open it to you to answer that, but it's okay to also say, well, my target audience is really just this, and that's who I focus on.
Yeah, I love that question. So yeah, it really depends on the type of business you're running. So like you said, spot on, brokerages, you need two types of people. You need the brand new people. You need the guys who are a little bit more experienced, because, you know, it's kind of like a symbiotic relationship. You kind of feed on one another in terms of sharing experiences and so on. For me personally, when I'm writing each sequence, whatever the content pieces I'm sharing, I always have an end goal where I'm leading them to. So this could be pitching them a membership, pitching them a community, pitching them a particular course. And for each of those specific offers, I do have an ideal target audience. So for instance, for my email program, I am targeting people who are problem aware. So these are people who understand the pain points that they're going through when it comes to email. I am not interested in targeting someone who is not sold on the idea of an email list, because that's going to take me a completely different type of work and content for me to convince them that, hey, you need an email list and all of that. So I'm not really targeting my content for that kind of audience. So because of the type of team that I run, I'm focused on only attracting a specific type of person for each of my office. But for, like you said, someone like, you know, who runs a brokerage and stuff like that, yes, you do need both types of people, and you can very easily actually segment them out. It's really a matter of within your email service provider, where through a simple quiz, or getting them to self kind of like identify with certain things that you've listed. Maybe I've been in business, I've been doing this for maybe 3 to 5 years. I've been doing this for 0 to 1 year, something like that. And once they click on that, you automatically segment them out, where you send them kind of like a tailored, targeted sequence of content pieces, you know, or that's tailored to the experience, tailored to the message that you want to share with, whether it's an experienced person or someone who is brand new. So it's really just understanding the mechanics of whatever program that you're using on your site. You can get your audience to segment it out. So within my community itself, there are people who only target just one audience and who do see themselves targeting a few different people. Like there are people who run education centers and they find the need to target students and parents at the same time. So it can be done. I mean, it's a little bit more work because you do need to tailor your messaging, but it can be done.
So Mira, that's again, such another great point. So, you know, you said in the beginning, you know, you're intentional about setting your business up, and we talked about being authentic already. I think the issue that a lot of brokers run into, and I gotta kind of put this out there. When they think that they're attracting or going after a certain type of agent, it's not really about what's best for the agent. It's about what's most convenient for them. So a lot of times you'll have brokers that say, well, you know what? I really just want experienced agents. And the reason why they say that is because it's less work for them. They're not set up because they don't have the training. They don't want to invest in them that way. They just want that person to come on board and start being productive. That's fantastic, unless that's not how your brokerage is set up. If your brokerage is really set up, that's going to be more conducive to a newer agent environment, and you're going out there trying to get the experienced agents because you're not authentically putting your message out there about who you are, then you end up with a conflict in your appointment and interview process. And so it's important to say in the beginning, take a real close look at who you are and what it is that you offer and how you're structured, because the things that you offer in your office are set up either for both groups. Sometimes it leans more towards one group, like experienced agents, and sometimes it leans more towards new agents. And you can't be telling your audience or sending things out to your audience, trying to connect with an audience that truly who you are doesn't resonate with them, because all that's going to do is frustrate your entire process.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mira, just a couple things, and then I'm super grateful for your time. Just a couple more things. We've heard the fortune is in the follow-up, right? So let's say, you know, this is very similar to, you know, someone who puts something in a cart and then says, maybe not right now. And then they leave that cart. So let's say a broker, nurtures the people. They build an attractive message. The agent comes in, says, yes, I would love to sit down with you and talk about, you know, what your brokerage can do for me. They sit down. And then they say, well, you know, let me think about it. Or sometimes they'll just say, you know, thank you for your time. No, thank you. This isn't the brokerage for me today. And I know that there are a lot of brokers that when that happens, you know, they, one of two things happen. They either get their feelings hurt, right? And they say, oh, you know, I'm not good enough or something like that. Or, and so there's three. They get their feelings hurt, or they get angry and they say, well, I didn't want that person anyway. Right. Or, you know, they're the person like we're getting ready to talk about and saying that doesn't mean that you're not supposed to stay connected with that person, because it doesn't mean they won't want your brokerage 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now. So what would you say from a follow-up standpoint, you know, is kind of some rules of thumb that, you know, work across business. And then Matt, of course, I'm going to come back to you after that, and you can put a real estate spin on it.
Yeah. So it actually, the situation that you just shared, it applies to so many different, in lots of different niches, lots of different businesses. So for me personally, because I sell digital products, and I've got lots of people in my audience who sell coaching and digital products as well. It's a situation that happens very often where, you know, you're selling something, people are like, you know, maybe not now, they still stay on your list. There are people who come and tell me, you know, keep selling this to me because I'm not ready right now. Those people give you a very clear message that, okay, you know, it's okay for me to keep selling to them. But there are others who may just not say something. So if there is a way for you to kind of keep tabs on the response that you've had, perhaps after that cup of coffee or after that call, where they're like, you know, maybe I'm in the middle of something, can you reach back out to me in 6 months, or can you reach back out to me in a couple more months? So if you are able to do that, I would say in the back end of your email service provider, whatever it is that you're using, you know, keep tabs of that person. Have like a tag or put them in a group of people and give yourself a reminder to follow up with them after this amount of time. So for me, when I know that there is a specific group of people who told me that I would be ready to get this in 6 months or 3 months, I do reach out after that specific period of time and give them the opportunity of getting on some kind of like a VIP list. Like a, you know, like an early bird or a VIP list. And then I would pitch them that offer again, because they specifically told me that I can reach back out. Now, for everyone else, they kind of go back into that system of nurture, because it just shows that they still need a little bit of handholding to get to that stage where they're ready to make a decision. So whenever I am ready with an offer, the same offer, if I'm relaunching it again to my list, I still make sure I do my due diligence, where I walk them through, kind of any objections that they have. I'm going to try and counter that for them. I'm going to, any kind of false beliefs that they may have about that particular topic, I'm going to make sure I address those. Any kind of FAQs that I may have missed out on in the previous conversation that I had with them, I'm going to make sure I address those as well. So it's kind of like a continuing cycle. And every time you do that, more and more people from that list, that 90% who said no, are going to kind of move into that group that say yes. So, you know, it's really going back to the basics of knowing how to nurturing someone and taking them through that journey again. So yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways you can do it. You can manually keep like a follow-up system, or you could kind of add all of them into like a follow-up pile. And then when you kind of reach out to them again, make sure you address the objections, the false beliefs and all of that from the start. Don't assume that they already know, because sometimes you need to put your message out there. And there's this thing that people say, you know, people need to come in touch with your message at least 7 times before they convert. I don't really know how much that is true, but you do need to keep reiterating your message again and again.
Yeah. So Matt, talk to us a little bit about that follow-up, you know, those touch points, and, you know, maybe why, you know, everybody shouldn't, you know, get their feelings hurt if everyone doesn't want to sit down and have coffee with them every single day. You know, you can only drink so much coffee.
I know, but iced coffee, I don't know if I have a limit on iced coffee.
So yeah, Matt has no limit on iced coffee. That's for sure. And candy corn.
Yeah, and candy corn. That's right. So there's apparently a bottomless pit in my stomach. I think it goes straight to a hollow leg or something on one side. And it's like, I can have so much of it. And the funny thing is I never had a full cup of coffee until maybe 8 months ago, something like that. I just couldn't, for whatever reason, I couldn't stomach it. And then all of a sudden I started drinking iced coffee and I was like, that's my drink. So anyway, all right, enough of that. So if I keep talking, Mira's going to need iced coffee because it's 10 o'clock or she's so I'll stop at that point. But I will say this. I wanted to make a point of this because I knew that this was really important for our audience. And I knew that Mira was excellent at this and I knew that it would come up. And so I was trying to keep track. And I lost track because there were so many other things that I was writing down because what she's saying is so incredible. But you said the word nurture so many times. I think it's very important to point out that whenever you're trying to develop a relationship with someone, no matter what type of interaction you're having, whether it's them buying a service or whether it's them buying a product from you, you have to make sure that you stay connected with them, not just I'm giving you something and it's in front of you. It has to be something that nurtures them. It has to be something that brings them along. It has to be something that connects with them in a way that's adding value to what it is that they do, right? So we've all heard before, you know, a tree is either growing or dying, right? So that's the reality of it. What real estate agents' business is the same exact way. And the truth is, brokerages are really good at different phases of that growth or at good phases of that dying of the tree, right? There are some brokerages that an agent can do really well if they're trying to slow their business down and trying to sell it to someone else, compared to other brokerages that are just really hyper-focused on the beginning part of the growth or the middle part of the growth. It is not one size fits all. That's simply just not how it is. You can't be that way. No matter what you think your brokerage is, that's not how it is. Take an authentic look at who and what you are. Figure out what part of growth or dying that you're best at. And that needs to be part of what you're nurturing people with so that it's helping them be in the right phase. What's going to happen is that message is going to resonate with people and you're going to start attracting them. Instead of chasing those people, you're going to start attracting them because you're staying in front of them with a message that truly is aligned with what your brokerage does. And I promise you, there's enough of an audience out there. So guys, from a brokerage standpoint, what we worry about is I have to be a lot of things to a lot of people or I'm not going to make enough money. And the truth is, if you just settle down into whatever your niche is, and if you expose that really well, and if you nurture the people that are eventually going to be going through that phase, and if you figure out who they are, it's going to have a constant flow of agents coming to your office. And the life cycle of an agent is something that you're going to be able to help them with. At the same time, it's going to help you make money. And so, Mira, I appreciate you bringing that up because that's what you were talking about by bringing up the nurturing over and over and how important it was in being foundational to what you're doing. So we appreciate you bringing that to the podcast for sure because that's such an important message for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mira, I know it's late there, so I'm not going to take up any more of your time. We would love to have you on and talk about some other things, you know, at a later episode. So I hope you had fun and maybe be up for that sometime. I want to make sure that everyone who's listening knows how to get in touch with you, how to learn more about you. Of course, everything that you say, I will put in the description below, make clickable links so that you guys can find her and follow her easy. What's the best way to connect and learn more about you, Mira?
Yeah, so it seems we were talking a lot about email. If email is on the radar of anyone who's listening to this, then I do have a free email course where I do talk a little bit more about, how to get started with email, how to nurture your audience. So that's at mira.email/course. I would say that's the best way. Or if they're kind of looking into diving into a little bit more of my books, then on Amazon, you could just type in my name and it's going to show up. So, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, I'll put that link there, and I'll put links to all of her books as well. So, Mira, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Mira.
Yeah, I'm going to put a bow on this really quick, and then we will let everybody go. So, guys, if you're listening to this on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, any of those platforms, make sure you hit that follow button. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit that red subscribe button, that bell right beside of it, you get notified every time we drop a new episode. If you want to learn a little bit more about, everything that we do, go to brokerpreneurpodcast.com. If you're an old school listener, you can still go to prospectboomerang.com. Click on podcast at the top. It'll redirect you to that page as well. Matt.
Yes, Ben.
We get the luxury of sitting down and talking to, Mira and some of the other greatest minds in business. But we really do these podcasts for one reason and one reason alone, and tell them why that is.
Because we just want to be part of your win.